And I'll never forget some of those early days in the bakery that kind of set the foundation of who I am and what I do. I'll never forget my first day at work. We walk in and I'm like, oh, am I going to make cakes, cookies, pastries, you know? And he brought me in the bathroom and he said, clean the toilet bowl.
I love it.
And he said, and I looked at him, he said, why, do you think you're too good to do it? And I said, no. And I knew that he would do the same thing. And he looked at me and he says, you got to clean this toilet bowl with the same amount of pride as if you're making a wedding cake.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. Some people just seem to be working harder than everyone else, or they've accomplished more than everyone else. Somehow, they know how to work at the highest levels and to squeeze value out of everything they do. And you might wonder, how did this person learn to do that? After talking to Bartolo Velastro Jr., I think I have an answer. They learn their work ethic at a very young age. That's definitely the case with him. You might know him as the Cake Boss from his hit show on TLC, or by Buddy, which is the name everyone calls him. And Buddy's story of hard work goes way back. He started in his family's bakery when he was just 11 years old and took over the family business at the ripe old age of 17 when his father unfortunately passed away. He may be making beautiful cakes, but his story is gritty and enterprising. I mean, this is a guy who started by cleaning the toilets. As a teenager, he told himself that he was not going to fail. He was going to work harder and longer than anyone. He was going to do everything necessary to be successful. And so he has. His bakery, called Carlo's Bakery, is an empire of shops around the country. And he's done it all by staying actively engaged in all parts of his businesses. I wanted to understand how Buddy learned to be such a hard worker so early and how it impacted the way he's built his life and career. So I headed out through the Holland Tunnel and into Jersey City, where Carlo's Bakery still stands. But today, thanks to Buddy's nonstop work, that little bakery is now over 100,000 square feet. How'd he do it all? Our conversation is coming up after the break. You all know me as the host of How Success Happens, but I'm also an entrepreneur. So that means I give all types of business presentations. And if I don't deliver, my business doesn't grow. It's that simple. That's why I use CrashPlan to back up my work. CrashPlan lets me get my files anywhere, anytime. Like, hey, my entire interview was done at night and I woke up to find out my external hard drive left with my wife. Or my entire cup of coffee got knocked over onto my keyboard, but my deadline didn't change. The reasons to get CrashPlan are literally endless. They don't place limits on the file sizes, external hard drives are covered at no additional cost, and I can access my files from anywhere, anytime. So wherever you're listening to this podcast, you could get your backups. Visit CrashPlan.com/How Success Happens to start your free 1 month trial today. Again, CrashPlan.com/How Success Happens. And now, on with the show. We're back. So I arrived at the bakery at 9 a.m., and I expected Buddy to be rolling in just as I did. But no, he'd been there since 6 a.m. because there was a leak overnight in the facility, and he wanted to check it out. That's pretty amazing. He could have had some underling take care of it, but despite all his success and fame, he still showed up at 6 a.m. on a Thursday himself to figure it out. That set our conversation up perfectly. I had to know how he maintains his drive and work ethic, so I started by asking him.
Yeah, that's kind of when my baking career started. I was about 11 years old, and my dad never said, like, you have to be a baker. He would say things to me like, you have to come to the bakery. I want you to learn work ethic. I want you to know what it's like to have to be a man and get up and go to work. But he was my hero, and I loved my dad. I idolized him. You know, everybody loved him. So when he said, you got to come to work, I was excited to spend time with him. And I'll never forget some of those early days in the bakery that kind of set the foundation of who I am and what I do. I'll never forget my first day of work. We walk in. And I'm like, oh, am I going to make cakes, cookies, pastries, you know? And he brought me in the bathroom and he said, clean the toilet bowl.
I love it.
And he said, and I looked at him, he said, why, do you think you're too good to do it? And I said, no. And I knew that he would do the same thing. And he looked at me and he says, you got to clean this toilet bowl with the same amount of pride as if you're making a wedding cake. Like, you have to do, when you do something, do it right. Don't half-ass anything that you do. And he would say to me things like, if you want your employees to get down on their hands and knees and scrub the floors, well, then you have to do it. You have to be the general that's in battle, that's in the trenches, because that's the generals that are most loved. And those are the people that they can't say no to you. And you could also call bullshit on all your employees too, because you've done it.
You've done it. You started from the bottom and built your way up.
Yeah. And whether you're here or not, and I got to get on my hands and knees and clean it, I'm going to do it. I don't care.
That's an incredible, I mean, just as an entrepreneur life lesson, when you've done everything that anyone else in the bakery or the entire facility has done, and starting at that point, I think that really just, when you become an owner, you understand every facet of it. Do you think that was the lesson your dad was trying to teach you?
150%. You know, he would tell me, you got to know what it's like to be the guy who's cleaning the toilet bowl or scrubbing the pans, because you have a lot more empathy. You have a lot more, you know, respect for the person and for the job that they're doing. I mean, listen, I'll give you a no bullshit like thing. Today, 6 a.m., I was here.
Right.
In the back, because they were having a problem with the lobster tails.
Which is incredible, because I love that, because we're just talking when you're 11 years old. We're talking now when you're incredibly established, you've got multiple bakeries, you've got multiple entrepreneurial business projects, you're a TV celebrity, but you're telling me right now, and this facility that we're in, we're here at your headquarters, basically, yeah, of Carlo's Bakery. It's I mean, how many square feet is it?
About 100,000 square feet.
100 square feet. And you were here at 6 a.m.?
Yeah. And because, again, for a couple of reasons. One, because I wanted to get to the root of the problem. Two, it's always good to go back to the war dogs that you've been with. I mean, I have guys that have been working here for 25, 30 years with me.
Yeah.
They know me. And they know that if I'm going to go on the back, then, you know, it's a different thing. It's a different world. And I find the problem. That's kind of one other thing about me. I'm obsessive compulsive.
Right.
So when I need to find the answer, my mind works and works and works until I'm like, all right, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we're doing. But that's my life.
Yeah. Which, I mean, and the obsessive compulsive, I think it actually is a great trait for an entrepreneur, because you're, and we've talked about this on this podcast with many guests, about being completely obsessed with your business, where it's your baby, and everything you do, you're doing to take care of that business. And a lot of the time, because you're that way, is the reason you've been successful. Do you think, because of, let's say, OCD and being on top of stuff, that has really been the driver of your success?
Definitely a huge part of it. I mean, definitely a huge part of it. And it's funny, because as I evolved, right, you know, after Cake Boss, and I started, you know, and I would meet CEOs of billion-dollar companies and networks and stuff like that, and you would talk to them, and you would see a little bit of you in them. You would see that little bit of crazy, obsessive compulsive of the details.
Not very
it's
different
like you
from
know,
yourself.
You know that it's in somebody's DNA that this is the way they're going to be. And, you know, it's a small percentage of people.
Right. So you grow up in the bakery. I mean, you start at 11. You've probably learned everything you need to learn in a few years working. And then I believe at 17, is that you end up taking over the bakery?
Yeah, unfortunately, when I was 17, my dad got diagnosed with stage 3 cancer. And we decided that I would drop out of high school temporarily, get him back, you know, after his chemo treatments, and then, you know, finish high school. I wasn't going to go to college, but I was going to at least finish high school.
You knew you were going to go into the business.
Yeah. I mean, listen, when I was about 15 years old, I made the decision that I wanted to be a baker. And it's because of it's my dream job. I would make something. I would get a sense of satisfaction. I really love to see how I can make it go better and faster and, you know, take things to different levels. So I love the challenge of it. plus my parents had a good business. I loved working with my family. So it was kind of like a natural fit, you know, but it was never forced. It was my decision. And I feel like in life, if you don't find what you love, you will never be successful.
Yeah, I believe you have, when you have that passion for something, that's what's going to get you up on every day when things are bad and thinking, you know, or if not, you're thinking, why am I doing this? You need that extra kick.
You need that kick. And then, you know, so after I decided I was going to be a baker, my father groomed me really to be, you know, the second in command and eventually take his position. We didn't think it was going to happen at 17.
Right. So you're 17. Are you ready for that challenge? Because I assume there's a lot of people a lot older than you that are working for the organization. And I mean, you're in high school. That's
all right. So let me even set the stage even better. Yeah. Okay. Me and my mom go, my 17th birthday, we get my license. Coincidentally, my dad was in a hospital in New York City because he would always go in and out of the hospital here in New Jersey. And then finally, you know, my mom's like, we're going to go to Columbia because we're not getting any answers. So brought him to Columbia Presbyterian. And me and my mom, we go get my license. We go in. We walk into the room. My dad's crying because he just got the news that he had stage 3 cancer. It was on my 17th birthday. So I'm a kid. I mean, I'm a junior in high school. 17th birthday. That was March 3rd. March 21st, my dad dies. That's it. So now I lost my dad, my best friend, and I got 30 employees. I got my whole family looking at me to grow up and be a man and take over this business. And for the first 6 months, I was a wreck.
I mean,
I was like an emotional wreck. I didn't know what to do. And then I do some of my best thinking when I drive. Sometimes I'm thinking so hard, I pass my exit. I don't even know where the hell I am. I'm like, holy shit, where am I? You know, because it's just the feeling. You know?
I do it. I love it. I put the music on.
Yeah, I put the music on and you just concentrate and you're thinking. And I was driving home and I was really upset. And I think I was crying to myself. And then, you know what? I was actually, because I used to live in Little Ferry and I passed Giant Stadium. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to fail. I don't give a shit what I have to do and how I have to do it and whatever's got to happen, I'm going to do it. So I decided that I was going to be the first one in, the last one to leave. The bakers who knew more than me, I was going to humble myself to them and I was going to ask them to teach me and show them that, you know, I was good. I was respectful. What I didn't know, I was going to read. I was going to experiment. I would do it and do it again and do it again and go back and forth. And that's where that obsessive compulsiveness just kicked in.
Yeah.
And I just yearned to learn everything I could. And I absorbed so much like a sponge. And about 3 years later, I like had the respect of all the employees. I had become what I consider a master baker. I was probably like 20 years old at the time.
Wow.
And then I started looking at the business because at the time, supermarket bakeries were putting bakeries like mine out of business.
Right. What year was this? Was around?
This was probably 1997.
Okay.
So about 97. And I'm like, you know, they're selling the donuts for a quarter a piece. They're selling the pies. You know, they're selling a pie that's the size of a spare tire for $3.
right.
How am I going to compete?
You couldn't.
You know, so I said to myself, I got to make stuff that they can't make. I always had more of an artistic flair, and I used to see those cakes in the magazines, and I said, you know, I could do it if I said to my supplier, send me some of that fondant stuff. I'm going to teach myself how to do it. And again, I just drove and obsessed.
What were you guys baking before that time in Carlo's Bakery? Was it the same types of products that were being sold in the grocery stores and nothing?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, we always had our signature stuff, our lobster tails, but you know, we were also a full-fledged American bakery with donuts and Danish and pies and cookies. But we had a huge birthday cake business even before I got into this.
Right.
But I looked at it like this and I said to myself, so you're telling me I put fondant on this cake and I make it a little bit prettier. And this 3-tier cake goes from being $250, $300 to $1,000.
Right.
So what am I, stupid? I
said,
you
margin.
Know how many donuts I got to make to make one cake?
Yeah.
Right. And I always knew the way that my mind works two ways, obsessive compulsive and efficiencies.
That's great.
So I build lines. I look at assembly. I understand process and procedure.
I can see from your baking, it's incredible efficient. And I mean, it's an incredible operation.
Well, I mean, and again, it's just evolved over the years. But even back then, I would look at the way my dad did things and I would be like, well, why don't we try this or whatever? And not because I thought that I was smarter. It's just that's the way that I was wired. I'm wired to say, hey, why can't we do more in a day? Or why can't we push the limits of production just by changing the pace or changing what you're doing?
Yeah.
Listen, a boss will tell you, you want to keep your employees honest? It's an assembly line. It's a conveyor belt.
Yeah.
You know why? Because the cakes don't stop coming.
Nope. Got to do they, it. Gotta,
and again, it's not where they got to be running and, you know, like, I love Lucy.
I love Lucy. But, shoving
but
candies
if
in
you want it to be kind of to a certain pace,
yeah,
and then you could know that, hey, at the end of the day, I'm going to get X You're amount of pieces. Yeah. So that you can really quantify, are you making money or are you not making money?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, if you're not making money, then, you know, what's the use of being in business?
Yeah, you got to pay salaries. And it seems to me that from you jumping in that moment where you said, I'm not going to fail, I'm going to succeed, having that drive. But really what it seems to me is going back to that first day when you're 11 and what your dad had you do in cleaning the toilets, it was almost like he was preparing you at that time to learn everything, knowing that
he did.
You were going to have to take everything over.
100%. And you know, I think that those seeds that he planted really made me the man that I am today. I think that without his guidance, without those years, without those lessons, I wouldn't be who I am. I mean, sometimes I worry because I try to do the same thing with my kids because I want to at least set that foundation and make sure that I'm doing enough of it. And again, listen, I grew up very good life. We had a very happy family. Yeah. My mom and dad, we went on vacations. My parents had money. They owned other real estate. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't like we grew up really nice, but my dad would say, look, you like nice stuff? You got to work.
You got to earn it.
You
got
whatever
own.
You want.
Yeah.
But you got to work. And then I started to get a taste and I was like, you know, every weekend, every holiday, every summer vacation, I worked every day.
Yeah.
Then I would meet up with my friends and always had a couple bucks on me. I could buy whatever I want. I could, you know, I felt good about it. So I would wake up at 6 a.m. and I'd go to the bakery with my dad. I'd get done at 5:00. I'd get showered. I'd go, still go out with my friends.
Right.
And then I would, you know, go back and do the same thing every day.
And you'd have to wake up. I know in the bakery business, right? Are you waking up? I mean, what time are you getting in at this time? Like, what type of hours are you putting in?
Well, again, today, the hours are a little bit different and they changed. But back in the day, I was probably in between 5 and 7 and probably about 5 to 7 every day.
Yep.
And then I would leave the bakery on an early day, 4:00, and on a late day, 7:00.
Wow.
There's days where, you know, I talk about the basement, right? Because that's where we did a lot of work in the bakery downstairs. And again, I come here and I look at this 100,000 square foot state-of-the-art facility.
Crazy.
And I think of the little basement that I learned in and worked in. And there would be days I would tell them that I didn't see daylight.
Yeah.
I would go down. It would be dark. I would stay there all day. I didn't, you know, somebody would bring me lunch and I would just work and then I'd leave and it'd be dark.
I'm sure. In the middle of winter, you probably never saw light.
But what I think is the difference of then and now, and I never thought it would be possible, but back then, the secret to success was I could outwork my problems. No matter how crazy or how big, I'll work harder. I'll work longer. I'll do more. But when you get into where I am now, no matter what, you can't. You can't outwork your problems because you can't be in 100 places at 100 times. If it's that one bakery and you know every single touch point, I knew every goddamn crumb in that bakery. Where it was, what was happening, who was buying it, how much we were paying for it, who was working overtime, who was everything.
Yeah.
And when you get into business like this, then it changes because now it's hard because you're a micromanager. Your instinct is to work and just go and I'll do it myself. Yeah. I don't care.
And not everyone else has that mentality. And I know myself as an entrepreneur, like starting out, my mentality was the same thing. Like, I'm going to make this a success. They're going to have to scrape me off this desk for me to fail. And I knew, but then what happened is my businesses have gotten bigger as they grew. And that mentality was a negative. And I had to learn how to change. Did you learn now? How have you changed?
A, you have to learn how to change. And I think, I don't want to say mistakes, because I do, to me, mistakes are learning curves. I think mistakes happen for a reason. And I think that, you know, you could always recover from a mistake that you make, but I did make some mistakes. And then, you know, I had to learn to balance my time and make sure that what I was doing was the right thing and empower other people. It's like giving away your child.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you're like, here, like, you know, I'm trusting you with my baby.
Very hard to do.
But thank God that I was able to learn how to do it. And, you know, sometimes, like a day like today, still got to come in and do it the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
Got to come in and roll up your sleeves and get down and dirty and show everybody, you know, you're still the boss.
Yeah. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, it's interesting, you know, listening to this podcast and some entrepreneurs just starting out, no matter how successful you've gotten into you, I mean, it's beyond imagination, I'm sure, but you're still, I love to hear the story about you still came in, you still had to get here at 6. And even though this is a massive operation now and you've got shops all over the world, you still had to come in here and show what you're about.
And the thing with that is to take it even a step further, I still love it. It's in my DNA. I mean, I got icing running through my veins. I mean, you know, it's part of what I still love to do. And I mean, look, there's days where I pinch myself and I'm like, man, how lucky am I? Like, this is my life. So I am so humbled and so grateful for all that has happened to me. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I didn't work for it, because I did.
Right.
And people always say, you're lucky. I say, the luckier I get, the harder I work.
But you know what? This is what I want to talk about. I mean, and this is what I wanted our listeners to hear, is that, because I remember coming here the first time and seeing this operation. And I think a lot of people see people who go on to television or reality TV and think, oh, that's why they're successful. That's how they built a great business. And for you, I want them to know, like, you were, as you said, 11 years old, 17 years old. You're putting in hours and hours within a business. This didn't just come about. Yes, the opportunity and Cake Boss helped the business.
Oh, but tremendously. Well, let me tell you, I use this analogy with some of my friends. When my friends say, you know, buddy, you drove a Porsche before you were the Cake Boss. So it's like, it's, yeah, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that in a bragging way, but
no, but it shows you worked for your success way before that came about.
And I also made real estate investments, and I would make, you know, it's just not that like, oh, well, hey, I'm going to work 9 to 5 and, you know, I'm going to make my paycheck and then, you know, I'm going to pay rent and that's it. No, my idea was, how do I grow? How do I do things? How do I set up my kids and my family and so on and so forth for years to come?
Yeah. And I'm sure Cake Boss wasn't an accident. How did that, though, come about? Well, what year? And
yeah, well, I mean, just to get into that, and I want to get into that in a second, but just to like give you another scenario. Okay. Well, this is what I find pretty fascinating. How many people, A, get to have a television show? Like, you know, I mean, and again, so you know, I own my own production company, so we make our own television. I think the stat is like 1 in 100 pilots even make it to air.
Yeah.
And then 1 out of 100 even make it for a second season. Right. Okay. So the odds are stacked against you, A. And then B, once you have that show on the air, how many people have turned it into what we did here? Right. It wasn't like, okay, because again, I could have just had, you know, hey, listen.
Minimal.
Yeah. And again, I say to myself, look, yeah, you could be on television. You can make decent money from that and stuff like that. But it's about setting up all these other businesses. And I attribute a lot of my success to being, I call it common sense and connecting dots.
Yeah.
Right. So when, like with the production company. So, you know, I started to understand the business. After 2 weeks of filming Cake Boss, again, I'm a natural born leader.
Right.
If we were in a wreck or in a survival mode, I would be like, okay,
you're alpha.
I'm alpha.
Yeah.
What are we gonna do? This is how we're gonna do it. We're gonna survive.
Let's go. Yep.
Right. So once we started doing Cake Boss, before you know it, I'm telling the camera guy, come over here. I'm setting this up. I'm doing this. I'm making it happen. So I started talking to the production crew and I said, you know, well, how long have you been working with the production company? I don't work for the production company. I'm an independent contractor.
Right.
The sound guy. I'm an independent, the producer. So I said, but who the hell works for the company?
Right. You realize so, you could set it up yourself.
I said, so I could set up the same company, hire the same people, and do it.
Right.
I said, why couldn't I do it?
Right.
And that was like 9 months after Cake Boss, and people were like, well, you know, they were looking at me like I was crazy.
Right. Like, you should be happy. Hey, I've got a show. But you were thinking five steps ahead.
I was thinking five steps ahead. And then I said to myself, you know, all right. So, like, why doesn't just anybody have television production? Well, A, I think when you get into that, you need to have that creative genius of coming up with concepts and ideas. So, again, my partner in my company is Art Edwards. And me and him have created Cake Boss and so many other shows together. And
he's your partner in the production.
He's my partner,
in the media.
In the media, So in the media portion of business, I knew that, A, I had to align myself with somebody who's brilliant and great. And then, B, at that time, my fame had risen enough where I knew that if I said I want to get you a television show and I shot a sizzle, I could take it to the right person at the network, and I'm going to get it seen.
Yeah.
Because that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, sure.
Right? It comes down to being able to go to the president of the network and say, hey, buddy's calling. Oh, they're going to take my call. They're going to take my call, and I'm going to say, here, look, I got this new show. It's this show. What do you think? And, again, it doesn't always work, but that's kind of the way I looked at the landscape and the opportunity.
Right. It's how the business works, how most businesses work.
And that's what I said. And it goes back to that fundamental way that I ran that bakery. It was about the relationships that I made with my vendors. You know, I knew that if I called my vendor on a Saturday and I said, I need something, he would jump and go because I paid my bills. I did my thing. I was a loyal guy.
He knew how much it meant to you and how hard you were working, and they're not going to let you down. And when you have the OCD or you're putting in, you're going to call them 50 times.
Exactly. And reciprocate.
Right.
Because when it was his kid's birthday, you hooked me up. No, this is for you. Don't worry about it. I always knew how to take care of people. I make a joke sometimes. I'm a hard person to say no to. I could take my phone and make a phone call and basically get whatever I want. And it was that way before Cake Boss.
Yeah.
Because I was a man of my word. I shook your hand. I told you I was going to do it. I came through for people. I did lots of favors. I was always fair. And when we made mistakes, I made good on it. So, you know, and I think that those fundamental aspects of running a business are the most important.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's no reason why that hasn't made you, or it is the reason it's made you really successful in being able to communicate, being relentless.
More from our guest, but first, a
Hiring
word
the right
from our
person
sponsors.
Takes time that you often don't have. Urgency can be your enemy when it comes to finding candidates that are truly meant for your business. That's why LinkedIn is the best place to post your job. I love LinkedIn. It literally was instrumental in helping me build my last business with finding clients and, most importantly, with finding talent. With both of my companies, finding talent was always the hardest thing to do, but LinkedIn has always been my go-to. Trust me, I have been on the site since 2004, and have over 28,000 contacts. I can't stress enough how great this platform is. LinkedIn Jobs screens candidates with the hard and soft skills you're looking for, so you can hire the right person fast. Things like collaboration, creativity, adaptability. LinkedIn looks beyond the work skills and puts your job post in front of qualified candidates who match your business requirements perfectly. That's how LinkedIn makes sure your job post is seen by the people you want to hire. People with the skills, qualifications, and other interests that will help your business grow. It's no wonder a person is hired every 8 seconds with LinkedIn. So find the right person for your business today with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want and get the first $50 off. Just visit linkedin.com/HSH. Again, that's linkedin.com/HSH to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply.
And our next sponsor. I'm usually not open to trying new types of dress shirts, especially ones with many colors or a little different from my normal look. But my wife, she's the stylist in our family, and she ends up buying me new shirts. I usually hesitate, of course, to wear them, but then I wear them, I start getting compliments, and I want more. Well, the same thing happened when I tried on Paul Frederick's shirt. They had interesting colors and really cool patterns that totally elevated my wardrobe. Paul Frederick has been making dress shirts for over 30 years, and those shirts are pretty darn good. The Paul Frederick shirts I have feel good, they're comfortable. I even tried a purple shirt on for the first time, and you know what? Adding some color to my look lifted my spirits, and people noticed. And of course, people noticed my shirt as I got compliments on it when I walked down the street. So of course, I went back to Paul Frederick and bought more shirts. And now you can get $50 off any shirt from Paul Frederick just by visiting paulfrederick.com/HSH. Again, that's paulfrederick.com/HSH.
And we're back. So thinking about that, and I love the idea of nine episodes in, whatever, you know, in terms of Cake Boss, and you're already thinking ahead of establishing your own production company. How does that go? How does the first year go with the show? And then how do you change that so you morph it into your own business?
Well, what happened was technically show hits the air and we're booming. I mean, we're just,
it's just taking off,
you know, we go from 13 episodes to 26 episodes to 40 episodes, which again, in today's day and age, you don't get just really rarely 40 episodes of anything.
Yeah.
So we're booming. And by this time I was courting Art, who's my partner.
How'd you know him?
Because he worked for the production company. He was like one of the main guys
in
the production company.
He was the best.
Me and him, he was the best. He was creative and stuff like that. So first thing was I said to, you know, the owner of the production company, I said, listen, you got to move Art to New York because they were in Denver. I said, because now we're going to have three franchises. Because then again, too, my mind was like, not only production company, because again, my wheels are spinning.
Yeah.
I said, what happens if Cake Boss goes away?
Right.
I need to have a cooking show. I need to have, I could do it.
You didn't want it to be relying on anyone
else.
Show.
And I said to myself, I felt like I had the personality. I felt like, you know, I was just myself and what I did. So Art, let's go. And it was great too, because the production company, which is High Noon, they were amazing. They were great partners, great people. Never wanted to hold me back, and really grateful for what I did for them too.
Sure, I mean, you put them on the map.
Them on the map as well. So me and Art would creatively come together, come up with the show ideas, and then we would go to the networks and sell them.
Right.
And by the time that happened, I was, you know, one of the top talents at TLC. So it was very easy for me to say, hey, I got another idea. I have another show. They were like, hey, he's doing well. Let's give it a shot. So once I had Art move to New York, I said, look, we have the whole buddy operations here. We're literally filming 11 and a half months out of the year.
And how are you managing both your traditional business, which, you know, at that point, then
that's where I learned. That's where I made a lot of mistakes. And that's where I learned that you have to try to get people
delegate.
And let go. Because that's when, you know, you start having panic attacks and you're like, you know, what the hell am I going to do? Because, you know, you feel everything's coming at you. You know what I'm trying to say?
How'd you do it?
Well, I was lucky enough that when I did Cake Boss, it was in my bakery. So it was still in my world. So I still had enough of the reins. I didn't have them, you know, fully tight.
But you were
tight.
Seeing everything. I can only imagine you them taping and you're looking over your shoulder to see how the production line's going.
Listen, I could tell you that's another gift or attribute. I could be talking to you, listening to her, watching what they're doing over there. That's from running a small business.
Right.
When you're in a small business,
your head's on a swivel.
It's crazy. So that's how I did that for that long. And then once Art came out, I said, listen, man, we got to start doing our own thing. And, you know, we told High Noon, they were happy for us. You know what I'm trying to say? And I said, look, Cake Boss, we will always co-produce. I said, you know, they came into like season. I says, because let's do it together.
Right.
You guys started it. We want to be able to do it.
It shows you something about your character and you know, why you've been successful too.
100%. And they were very supportive of anything that we were doing. Even in the beginning, you know, we weren't, you know, 100% established, like whatever we could do to help. And we started Cake House Media about 4 or 5 years ago. About 5 years ago, and then we filmed lots of different stuff and my stuff, and you know, it's just been a growing evolution.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll take it a step further, right? So here I am, and I'm starting Cakehouse Media.
It's about 5 years ago.
About 5 years ago. And I'm looking around, and I'm like, you know, why don't we set up a studio here? Why don't we make this studios too? Because again, I see things. You go film a different production, you go to Brooklyn, there's no parking, there's no this. You go to Manhattan, there's no parking, there's the sets are old, and you know, it's tight, it's cramped, it's this, it's that. And I know that they're always looking for places to film.
Yeah.
I know that from New York City, you could throw a rock and hit Jersey City, where Jersey we are. City. We're in Jersey City.
It's super easy. You come right through the tunnel. I came through the Holland Tunnel. There's parking, there's space. It's smart.
So I said, let me start a studio. So when I told my partner first, he's like, you're crazy. He's like, you're nuts. He's like, you're nuts. I'm like, no. I'm like, this is what we got to do. I'm telling you, we got to do studio here. And I said, we got to build a post-production. He's like, yeah, but we didn't really get that many orders for the show yet. He's like, you know, we could still rent in the city. I said, I'm telling you, this is what's going to happen. This is 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. 2 years ago, what are we wind up building? The post-production and the studios, yep. Because that's the way I'm wired.
Yeah.
And then you say to yourself, why not? You say to yourself, because they are going to need somewhere to edit the stuff. They are going to need somewhere to film the stuff. Why can't it be here? Why not?
Sure.
That's kind of what we do now. We have the studios. We have the production company, plus the factory for the product of the goods, plus the corporate office that kind of runs the bakeries, the restaurants, the new concepts, and the television and media and all that good stuff.
So looking ahead into the future, and I love the fact you said you're here because you obviously don't need to be here, but you're here because you still have a passion for the baking business. Where do you take yourself at this point and into what ventures? Where can you vision what it might look like a few years down the road?
Absolutely. I think the production company is doing well. We have a couple new shows that are coming on the air, which I think are going to blow the doors off. I'm real excited about them. I think from a bakery perspective, we're definitely going to continue to open bakeries. I think, and listen, we've opened and closed bakeries. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and try to tell you that or hide from the fact that we've made mistakes.
Sure.
And what mistakes did we make? We made real estate mistakes. I would say more than anything, and I'll tell you why. In my opinion, my first idea of growing Carlo's Bakery was to put it in every downtown neighborhood bakery. I was like trying to bring back the Main Street Bakery, which again, you see closing in every town and
everything
else.
There's not many of them.
Very few. And I didn't realize also at the time that, A, there was already a lot of empty spaces on the main streets.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you pull in the Amazon and the e-commerce portion of it. I mean, it's a nail in a coffin.
Yeah.
This is the worst time ever.
And with real estate costs, I mean, it's just so counterproductive.
It is. So, but when we initially opened the bakeries, we would have a surge because, you know, we were in the town and, you know, so it took me almost 2 to 3 years of opening and understanding locations to realize that you're better off going to Times Square, paying more rent, and going for it. And that was a mistake that I learned a hard time because it was the first time where I had to say, like, I'm going to close something. Like, I couldn't go and...
Was that hard for you, like, thinking it was a failure? Oh, even after all the success, that killed you, right?
It drove me. It drove me nuts. And again, you know, you learn the hard way. Like, even if you were losing money, you were trying to keep it alive and keep it alive. Where you should have just said, hey, listen, you know what? There's sometimes you got to put on your CEO cap and just be like, look, check this, bury this thing and be done with it and move on.
It's interesting. What made you so successful in the fact you wouldn't give up? And like, I go back to you saying to yourself at that young age, like, I'm not going to fail. Anything that happens along those lines, you're thinking that that's a failure for you, no matter how far you've come.
Yeah, 100%. Listen, the biggest critic of Buddy Velastro is Buddy Velastro. I don't need people to judge me or tell me, believe me, when I do something wrong or I make mistakes or whatever, I beat myself up worse than anybody.
Yeah.
I'm my own worst critic.
Get it.
But over time, I've learned that you got to learn from those mistakes and A, not make them again, B, and sometimes it goes into... Look, one thing that I've learned, I can't train you for a month or 6 months and give you everything I know and what I have in my heart. What I have in my heart for this place, it's either you're going to have or you're not. And you are at the mercy of whoever is going to be there and be your representative. And nobody's going to be there the way that I was at that bakery in Hoboken. You can put me in any bakery that I own. If I go there and do what I did in Hoboken, it's going to be successful. Because I was there 6-7 days a week. I was there Christmas Day. I was there all different to make it happen. But it was mine. It was, you know, I did it for the right reason. So, and you can't expect people, just it's rare to find someone who's going to do that.
I think that's got to be the hardest thing is as an entrepreneur is to ever find people who are going to do or put in the time. And I think one of the biggest lessons that you've expressed today is getting the point where you understand that not everyone's going to be you. Not everyone's going to show you that effort. But I love the fact you're saying you got to understand that, learn from that and deal with it and make, you know, make it as good as you can.
Well, my dad also used to tell me things, which is the same thing, like, hey, if this guy is better at cutting and he can't ice a cake, so let him cut cakes.
Right.
You know what I'm trying to say? It's about putting the pieces in the best position to have the best results. Inevitably, when I made a promise to my parents that when I took over the bakery, I told them that I'm going to do what's best for Carlo's Bakery, not what's best for Buddy Velastro or my sisters or whatever. I have to step back and say, look, by doing these procedures or by using these ingredients or by putting these people in the right way, is that the best possible product? That's the way I look at things, right? That's my first thought process. And then I try to apply and put the pieces to get the best results all the time.
Well, it looks like you definitely have done that. And I mean, I can only imagine what you're on to next. I love your story. I love the fact that you've become this big TV star, but the real story goes back to Hoboken and 11 years old and 17. And you don't get to where you are just by luck.
And being humble. I never forget where I came from. I always remain humble. When I see my fans, I mean, listen, when I open a store and I've had my publicist and people tell me that they've worked with so many different people, I go to that opening from 5 a.m. and I stand there until 10, 11 o'clock at night and take pictures with fans. I mean, straight, like no non-stopping. And again, why? Because if these people stood online and they want to meet me and they want to shake my hand, my dad raised me to be the type of person that you stand there and you be a man you do what you have to do.
From everything you've told me about him, I could only imagine what he would say if you didn't do that.
No, 100%. So, you know, that's really, in a nutshell, that's who Buddy Velastro is.
Yeah. Well, super, super successful and so grateful to have you on the show. And I love your story. And again, thanks for having me.
You got it. And thank you for having me.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.